This is Melissa, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. And this is Arizona History. Today's reading is from the Territorial News newspaper, published October 30th, 2024. First article is Arizona, Web of Time, written by Jim Harvey. The pauses will be between each paragraph that have a separate subject matter. At the Deer Valley Rock Art Center on the Sonoran Desert, close to Interstate 17, visitors can see pictures and symbols made by prehistoric American Indians. Some are estimated to date back 5,000 years. The year was 1858 when an American traveler saw a southern Arizona silver mine he was told averaged $600 to the ton of ore. Without doubt, he said, it was the richest silver mine in the world. The mine was 25 miles from Tubac, and there were 200 men working in it. Another American explored the Grand Canyon by boat in 1871 through 1872. When he told about it later, he said the Colorado River in places was a veritable dragon, loud in its dangerous lair, defiant, fierce. He added that the river and the canyon's walls made clear the impossibility of human courage and smothered hope. East of Flagstaff in 1881, an 18-year-old called Arizona Bill shot and killed Charles Collins during an argument. The teenager was hanged from a tree by railroad workers who fired 14 shots into his body. An 1897 posse from Williams arrested the leader of an outlaw gang for robbing a train. His name was Fleming Parker, and he was put in jail, then killed a man when he escaped. Lawmen finally caught him on the Navajo reservation riding a horse he'd stolen from the sheriff of Yavapai County. He was charged with murder, convicted, and hanged by the same sheriff. The 1903 Williams Town Council passed an ordinance prohibiting girls under 17 years old from entering a saloon. The ordinance also prohibited grown women from standing around saloons between the hours of 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. And it made it illegal for women to work as bartenders. The purpose was to force the town to be more respectable. East of Tucson in 1924, the 17-square-mile Chiricahua National Monument was created. It was an Apache stronghold during the Indian Wars of the 1800s and is a wonderland of ancient volcanic rock sculptured by erosion into unearthly shapes. The next article, $13 a month. Whether scouting the movements of Native Americans, escorting immigrants across the prairie, or participating in battle, thousands of U.S. military patrols crisscrossed the American West during the Army's 100 years of service there. Permanent posts typically served as the headquarters for most Army units, but smart commanders quickly learned the usefulness of patrols. The use of far-traveling squads of men, usually cavalry, proved to be the best means for policing the thousands of square miles of Indian territories that separated the forts. A typical patrol of the late 1870s consisted of detachments of one to several companies of cavalry. Each company featured 50 to 100 mounted men. On patrol, each soldier was supplied for a journey of several days. His equipment consisted of a rifle, pistol, extra ammunition, canteen, tin cup, knife, shelter half, haversack, saddlebags, poncho, and a feed bag for his horse. His food while on the trail consisted of bacon, hardtack, and coffee. For all his efforts, the enlisted man was paid $13 a month. 150 years ago in the Old West, October 4th, 1874, the Kiowa leader Santana turns himself in at the Cheyenne and Arapaho Agency in Darlington, Texas. He and Big Tree will be allowed to remain out on parole, but Santana will be returned to the Texas State Penitentiary. October 6, 1874. The Gordon Party, 26 men, women, and a 10-year-old boy, departed Sioux City, Iowa, headed to Dakota Territory in search of the Black Hills gold that was discovered by Custer's men in August. October 23, 1874. Lieutenant Bernard Riley, Jr. reports that the 5th Cavalry killed 16 Indians on the Little Colorado River in Arizona. October 29, 1874. Wyatt Earp is first mentioned in print in the Wichita City Eagle, which refers to him as Officer, and Wyatt Earp, spelled W-I-A-T-T. Earp is spelled E-R-P. Also on October 29, 1874, Sergeant R. Stauffer reports that the 5th Cavalry killed 8 Indians and captured 5 at Cave Creek in Arizona. Another article on Arizona Web of Time by Jim Harvey. Pueblo Indians living in New Mexico villages called the Navajos cultivators of the fields because they were farmers long before the Spanish appeared in the 1500s. They grew corn, beans, squash, and melons. The Navajos learned sheep and horse ranching from the Spanish and grazed their livestock in New Mexico and Arizona. A tall tale about an ancient lost city at Arizona's Grand Canyon was told by a man named G.E. Kincaid in 1909. His story was repeated by newspapers and magazines all over the country. He claimed he'd entered the city, large enough to hold 50,000 people, through a cave high on a Grand Canyon cliff. He said he'd found mummies, copper tools, and writing he thought came from Egypt or Tibet. He failed to give directions to the city. It's possible Kincaid never existed. In 1875, when Arizona was a federal territory and not a state, eastbound travelers from Prescott to Santa Fe, New Mexico, rode buckboards. They brought their own food, including hardtack, because there were no places to eat on the 500-mile, 7-day trip. Whiskey-drinking boomers who delight in six-shooters, fine horses, saddles, and fast women is what a Flagstaff newspaper editor called the Cowboys of 1883. Cowboys herded cattle from their ranches to the town and put them on trains bound for market. 1891 was the year the University of Arizona opened at Tucson. It was a very small operation to begin, with only 36 students and 6 professors. Ellsworth and Emery Kolb were 2 brothers from Pennsylvania who were professional photographers. They took the first motion pictures of the Grand Canyon in 1911 and worked out of a studio on the canyon's south rim. Their studio building still exists. After 49 years as a federal territory, Arizona was admitted to the Union as a state in 1912. The new state's official flower was the white blossom of a giant cactus, which grows on the Sonoran Desert. This article, The Buffalo Soldiers, in the Territorial Newspaper, October 16, 2024. While African Americans fought in both the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812, it was their participation in the Civil War that led to the creation of organized black regiments, who came to be known as the Buffalo Soldiers. Often the victims of racial discrimination, the Buffalo Soldiers conducted themselves with dignity and honor. Their efforts during peacetime, as well as during conflicts such as the Indian Wars and the Spanish-American War, clearly established that blacks were capable soldiers and thus aided in the desegregation of the armed forces. Because a policy established in 1820 barred blacks from serving in the regular army, many of them fought for the Union Army in volunteer regiments, such as the 73rd Regiment of U.S. Colored Troops, Hunter's Regiment, the 1st Kansas Colored, and the 54th and 55th Regiments of Massachusetts. By the end of the Civil War, more than 180,000 black men had fought for the Union Army, and more than 38,000 of these soldiers died in the war. After the war, Congress began to consider the formation of black regular army units in 1866. Opinions varied on this idea. Some objected, claiming that blacks could not perform military duties as well as whites, that they were unwanted in the North, and that in the South they would be a nagging reminder of the Union's victory over the Confederacy. In spite of the opposition, Congress voted to enlist 6 black regiments for 2 reasons. First, given their strong record of participation in the Civil War, several members of Congress voted to create the black regiments out of a sense of fairness. Second, Congress realized that blacks were less likely than whites to desert because they had fewer opportunities in civilian life. Therefore, on July 28, 1866, Congress passed an act establishing the 9th and 10th Cavalries and the 38th, 39th, 40th, and 41st Infantry Divisions, which were later reorganized into the 24th and 25th Infantry Regiments. Scores of blacks rushed to enlist for 5-year terms at $13 per month. The men came throughout the country. Their ages ranged from 18 to 34, and many of them were former slaves. They initially began patrolling the Great Plains in April 1867. Their main duties included removing tribes considered to be dangerous and mapping the unsettled western frontier for white settlers seeking land. Additionally, the soldiers helped to remove settlers from unassigned land and protected law-abiding citizens from Native Americans attempting to either reclaim or remain on the land that the federal government had taken away from them. Although the all-black regiment's main duties did not involve fighting, there were many instances when they engaged the enemy. A notable battle occurred on August 1, 1867, when the 10th Cavalry became involved in a skirmish with the Cheyennes after a panic-stricken railroad worker rode into their post near Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. He explained that Cheyenne warriors had attacked the workers' camp and killed 7 men. Under the command of Captain George Arms, 34 black soldiers mounted their horses and raced toward the camp. While riding, the troops found themselves surrounded by Cheyenne braves and a gunfight broke out. The Cheyennes had superior position and the soldiers were trapped. After approximately 6 hours of fighting, the soldiers were low on ammunition. Realizing that they needed to escape in order to survive, Captain Arms gave the command and the soldiers broke through the circle, fleeing with nearly 300 Cheyenne warriors in pursuit. The men rode hard for 15 miles before they were met by reinforcements who assisted them in driving the Cheyennes away. While the 10th Cavalry survived the battle, 13 soldiers were wounded and 2 were killed. Sergeant William Christie of Mercersburg, Pennsylvania, and Private Thomas Smith of South Carolina became the first black casualties of the Indian Wars. While the 10th Cavalry lost 2 men, they gained something significant from the battle, the nickname Buffalo Soldiers. There are 2 popular theories explaining why the Cheyennes referred to the black troops as Buffalo Soldiers. One flattering theory contends that the Native Americans, who honored the buffalo because it fought ferociously when cornered, were impressed with the bravery and skills that the black soldiers exemplified while surrounded. Thus, the Cheyenne warriors likened them to the buffalo. A second theory suggests that the Cheyennes referred to them as buffalo soldiers because they wore long buffalo skin coats to stay warm during the harsh plains winters. Regardless of which theory is true, Native Americans used it as a term of respect, and the soldiers embraced the name. While the name was initially given to the 10th Cavalry, it was later used to refer to all of the black divisions. The Buffalo soldiers distinguished themselves as valiant troops during the Indian Wars. The service of Sergeant Emmanuel Stance shows the manner in which they fought. On May 20th and 21st, 1870, Stance and 9 fellow members of Company F of the 9th Cavalry engaged a band of Apaches while on patrol near their post at Fort McKavett, Texas. At the time, an Apache band was moving toward the Texas Panhandle with a herd of horses and 2 white children that they had taken captive. Stance and the other soldiers charged the Native Americans, who abandoned their horses and fled toward the mountains. A warrior sharing a horse with one of the kidnapped children pushed the child off into the brush to make his escape. The Buffalo soldiers captured all 9 of the horses that the Apaches left behind, and the child eventually made his way to safety at the fort. The boy's older brother remained with the Apaches before later being reunited with his parents. The following morning, overloaded by the extra horses, Stance and his detail decided to return the animals to the fort. As they traveled back, they witnessed a group of approximately 20 Native Americans en route to attack a group of soldiers guarding a small herd of government horses. Stance again ordered his detail to charge, and the Native Americans retaliated, but to no avail. They soon fled, leaving behind 5 horses, which Stance and his men captured. As they continued their journey to Fort McKavett, the Native Americans followed them and launched a final attack. Again, Stance and his men successfully drove them away, eventually returning to the fort with 15 captured horses and all of his men uninjured. Stance's bravery did not go unnoticed. The skirmishes marked his 4th and 5th encounters with Native Americans, and in all the battles, he demonstrated courage under fire. He distinguished himself so well that his commanding officer, Captain Henry Carroll, praised his performance. On June 20, 1870, based on Carroll's recommendation, Stance became the first black soldier in the U.S. Regular Army to receive the Congressional Medal of Honor. After the Indian Wars ended in the 1890s, the regiments continued to serve and participated in the Spanish-American War, including the Battle of San Juan Hill, where 5 more Medals of Honor were earned. They took part in the 1916 Mexican Expedition and in the Philippine-American War. A little-known contribution of the Buffalo soldiers involved 8 troops of the 9th Cavalry Regiment and 1 company of the 24th Infantry Regiment, who served in California's Sierra Nevada as some of the first National Park Rangers. U.S. Army regiments had been serving in the National Park since 1891, but until 1899, the soldiers serving were white. Beginning in 1899 and continuing in 1903 and 1904, African-American regiments served in Sequoia, Yosemite, and General Grant, known as Kings Canyon, National Parks. The Buffalo soldiers played an integral role in paving the way for blacks seeking to enlist in the military. They endured racism and served in harsh conditions, making it possible for blacks to be accepted as equals. While they were scarcely used late in their tenure, their skill, bravery, and valor led to the establishment of other successful black units, such as the 51st Defense Battalion, the 761st Tank Battalion, and the Tuskegee Airmen. They also paved the way for the desegregation of the military. Although largely missing from history books, the Buffalo soldiers have been commemorated with statues and museums in places such as Fort Riley, Kansas, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, Fort Bliss, Texas, Junction City, Kansas, Tucson, Arizona, and Washington, D.C. A New Kind of Trousers, from Territorial News, October 2, 2024. Jacob W. Davis, a tailor in Reno, Nevada, invented a new kind of trousers by using rivets to secure the pockets and seams. but he couldn't patent the idea because his wife said he had already spent too much money on his previous inventions, a steam-powered canal boat and a steam-powered ore crusher. Davis decided to seek help from his denim supplier, San Francisco's Levi Strauss & Company. At the time, Strauss & Company was a store rather than a manufacturer, a four-story emporium with traveling salesmen that reached miners at the diggings. Davis may have been literate in his native Yiddish, but this letter was drafted by Reno's pharmacist, a questionable speller. I also send you by express 2 pieces overall, as you will see one blue and one made of the 10-ounce duck, which I have bought in great many pieces of you and have made it up into pants, such as a sample. The secret of the pants is the rivets that I put in those pockets, and I found the demand so large that I cannot make them up fast enough. I charge for the duck $3 and the blue $2.50 a pair. My neighbors are getting jealous of these success, and unless I secure it by patent papers, it will soon become a general thing. Everybody will make them up, and there will be no money in it. Therefore, gentlemen, I wish to make you a proposition that you should take out the latter's patent in my name, as I am the inventor of it, and the expense of it will be about $68. All complete. And for these $68, we'll give you half the right to sell all such clothing, revited according to the patent, for all the Pacific states and territories. The balance of the United States and half of the Pacific coast I reserve for myself. The investment for you is but a trifle compared with the improvement in all coarse clothing. I use it in all blanket clothing, such as coats, vests, and pants, and you will find it a very saleable article at a much advanced rate. These look like a trifle hardly worth speaking of. Nevertheless, I knew you could make a very large amount of money on it. If you make up pants the way I do, you can sell duck pants, such as a sample, at $30 per dozen, and they will readily retail for $3 a pair. Strauss decided he would take a chance and started manufacturing rather than just retailing. He must have been convinced by the prices Davis claimed to receive for his new pants, which were about 3 times the going rate for a regular pair. Davis moved his family to San Francisco to manage production. In the company's first century, more than 100 million pairs of Levi pants were sold. The Battery Street offices to which Davis sent the letter is near the site of today's Levi Plaza, headquarters of one of the most famous brand names in American history. From Territorial News, November 13, 2024. Arizona Web of Time. Vulcan's throne in the depths of the Grand Canyon was created by volcanic action 79,000 years ago. It is called a cinder cone, has steep sides and a vent from which lava was ejected in small pieces. The pieces cooled and hardened, forming what are called cinders. Norbana was the leading Navajo chief in the 1840s when war with the U.S. Army began. He was born in 1766, 10 years before white colonists back east declared their independence from English rule and created the United States. Northwest of Tucson in 1870, Apache Indians made arrowheads out of beer bottles discarded by U.S. Army troops. 1870 was the year John D. Rockefeller founded the Standard Oil Company, P.T. Barnum opened a circus called The Greatest Show on Earth, and the National Weather Bureau was created. One of President Teddy Roosevelt's 1906 executive orders created a national monument at a place between Flagstaff and Phoenix called Montezuma's Castle. There were prehistoric ruins there, and still are. Buried treasure in Columbus, New Mexico? Columbus, New Mexico, near the Mexican border, south of Deming, is mainly known for the famous raid by Pancho Villa in March 1916. There is even a Pancho Villa State Park on State Highway 11 west of town. Not so well known is a tale involving a site east of Columbus where there still may be buried a cache of stolen outlaw loot. According to an old cowboy, Bert Judia, thousands of dollars were buried on a ranch at that location. Loot from a robbery down in Tijuana, Mexico. The year was 1908. Judia had met up with a Texan named Jim Strickland who had vaguely outlined a project south of the border at Canana, in which he wanted Judea's help. Bert at first thought it had something to do with mining, since Canana was near several large mines. As it turned out, Strickland used Judea to transport the proceeds of a robbery, which Strickland and several others had committed. The plans were for Strickland to meet Judea afterward at the ranch near Columbus, but the Texan never showed up. Judea later learned that he had been killed shortly after the holdup. Bert Judea was not an outlaw, and he was afraid to keep the money. He buried it near the windmill on the ranch, which he later described as a few miles out of Columbus at the edge of the sand dunes. In an interview made public in 1974, Judea said he hid the loot in cans and fruit jars on the east side of a sand dune, on a direct line from the windmill toward the peak of a mountain. He said he went back once to see if it was still there, but did not dig it up. At times, he said, he thought of retrieving it and putting it in a bank, but he was afraid somebody might become suspicious and connect him with a robbery. This is Melissa, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org, all lowercase. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then, under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. You can hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.